Enchanted Sky Media.
This is Code 3, the podcast for firefighters. Now, here's your host, Scott Orr.
Thanks for joining me again this week. Money in the form of city funding is getting harder to come by these days. That's especially true for fire departments. Most departments are struggling to pay for the basics. Here in Prescott, the fire department was in a world of money trouble. Enter the SAFER grant. I don't think it's going too far to say this grant saved the city's fire department. Joining me now to explain all this is Prescott Fire Battalion Chief Corey Moser. Welcome to Code 3.
Thank you, Scott. It's good to be here. I really appreciate the invite.
So tell me first, what condition was the department in, say, a year, 18 months ago?
Well, we were struggling, and I think that's not any secret to anybody or the reasons for it, but what we were having to do was brown out a station. And just to give a quick definition of that, that means that the station, while not fully closed, was not staffed up to our minimum standards. And so the citizens that lived in the area of the browned out station, which ended up being the one by the airport, they were at greater risk than the rest of the city because they didn't have the same kind of firefighting protection or emergency medical protection as everybody else in the city did. And that really concerned us greatly. We had several instances where there were close calls as a result of having the station browned out for that period of time.
So how many firefighters would be a full staff for you folks?
For minimum staffing, what we have is 3 firefighters on each engine. Every one of those firefighters has to be at least EMT basic qualified, and we have to have at least 1 paramedic on each engine. And so for us, that's minimum staffing. Anything short of that, and we don't feel like we're able to provide the minimum service that our community expects of us.
And how many total firefighters and battalion chiefs would that be?
So we have 5 engines that we staff. With 3 people on each engine, that gives us 15. And then we have 2 additional firefighters that we have employed to make up for sick call-out days and vacation days, scheduled vacation days. And then 1 battalion chief per shift. So what you're looking at every day is 17 firefighters on engines at full staffing, at minimum staffing 15, and then 1 battalion chief on duty.
But at the time, you didn't have that many on staff because the budget wouldn't allow it.
That is correct. That is correct. And some days we would have to fully black out the station, which meant that the apparatus was not staffed whatsoever. And some days we would have 2 people on board a rescue, in which case they were able to provide minimum life-saving efforts, so CPR and things of that nature. But if somebody was in a car accident and needed to get cut out of the vehicle, extricated out of the vehicle, they would not be able to do that. They were not able to do any kind of entry on hazardous materials calls. They weren't able to do any kind of structural firefighting. There was a number of things that they were limited in being able to do in that instance.
Right. You have a division chief who said when you have a fire, the only thing that will do is a fire engine.
That is correct, and there's a number of reasons for that. Probably the most obvious one is simply the fact that the pump that we have on that rescue is not large enough to supply the quantities of water typically needed for today's residential structure fires, and certainly not for today's commercial structure fires. Most of the material that we have inside of homes is synthetic, and as a result, it takes a large amount of water to put those fires out. And that says nothing about the simple number of tasks that need to be completed while on a fire. With 3 people on an engine, you need 1 person to pump it. According to OSHA, you need a minimum of 2 people to go inside the building, and you need 2 people standing outside to effect a rescue, again, according to OSHA. So when we bump down to that rescue, as you pointed out, we're very limited. We're not able to really do any kind of structural firefighting whatsoever, and very basic life-saving measures, even for EMS calls.
So with all that in mind, the department went out and got a SAFER grant. How much money was it for, and what did you guys do with that money?
So every year we have a ballpark of about $2 million assigned to us through this SAFER grant, and it's for a two-year period. And the intent of that is for us to be able to fund 9 positions. What we're able to do then as a result of that is to eliminate the brownouts that we were facing up until this point. So as it stands today, because of that SAFER grant that we got through FEMA, we're able to have 5 fully staffed engines every day with no brownouts.
SAFER grants are supposed to fill the gaps, but
correct,
they typically end up running out and there's still no real solution. So the firefighters get laid off again. What are you guys doing to avoid that?
Well, that's a good question. The SAFER grant, if you read the definition of it, it's not a renewable grant. We can reapply, but it may not save those 9 positions based on what the SAFER grant rules are at the time of application. So if we had to put in for a renewal of it today, according to this year's rules, we would not be able to re-up those 9 positions. We would have to either be able to fund them ourselves or lay them off, because today's rules don't allow for the retention.
So the question is, what are you guys doing to make it possible to fund that?
Well, we're seeing a good community effort right now to try to help us out with that. Really, if the money's there, we're going to keep the positions. But if the money's not there, we have to look at how it is that we're going to serve the community with one less fire engine on the road. And Scott, just being frank about it, we can go ahead and put a rescue back on the road, again, like we did with the brownouts, if we have to let our SAFER grant-funded firefighters go. But there is great concern within the fire department, because if we go back to that brownout situation, which is what we're facing, if we don't come up with funding for those 9 people, that whole corridor of 89A, which is one of the most heavily traveled corridors these days in the state, and 89 between Prescott and Chino, the airport, all the homes that are being built out there and all the homes that already exist, they're going to have a lower level of protection than what they have today. And so really, I guess if I had to answer your question directly, Scott, we don't have many alternatives. Either the money's going to be there or it's not, in which case we're going to have to reduce the level of service to that area.
Let's say that the grant expires and there is no funding to cover that. I mean, there were close calls, as you said. There was one at the airport itself. Can you talk about that one?
Yes. So during one of our days that we were browned out, we actually had a helicopter crash at that airport. And thankfully, nobody died as a result of it. But when you look at the numbers, we were significantly delayed in our response because of the brownout situation. And that hurts our hearts as firefighters when that happens, because we take our responsibility to protect the public very, very seriously. And to think that for any reason whatsoever, we might have provided less than what we see to be a minimum service to somebody that's in danger really bothers us. It goes home with us at night, Scott, in all honesty. And that's one of the unique things about this job and public safety jobs is it is work, but the moral and ethical component that's attached to it goes home with you every night. And you ask yourself, did we do the best that we could for the people that live in our community? And when we see something like that happen out at the airport, or there's another instance where there was a car accident that we felt that we had a significantly delayed response to that, that stuff sticks with our members. It sticks with our supervisors and our staff. And we spend a lot of time and effort trying to figure out how we can address that issue. And there are some good things that are going on right now in terms of alternative response models. You've probably heard some discussion about that around the community. One of the things that we've just seen introduced into our community is a non-emergency response organization called Taros. And what Taros does is they handle psychiatric and substance-related crises. So there's no medical component to it. It's simply somebody that's having a psychiatric emergency or they're having a substance-related emergency and who is voluntarily willing to seek help. And by them, by Taros, transporting the person to a either a rehab or a mental health facility, there's a crisis service unit that just opened in Prescott Valley. By them transporting them out there, what that's doing is that's freeing our engines and our ambulances up to be able to go on the true emergencies in the community. And so hopefully that will increase the reliability of our units. So if you call 911, the units will be available more frequently and kind of ease the stress on our overall system. So we're very excited about that. And really, Scott, when we're faced with cuts like this, that's what we have to do. We sharpen our pencils, we sit around as a group, and we try to come up with the most creative ways that we can come up with to provide the same level of service to our community with the resources that we have available. And sometimes we're able to figure it out, and sometimes, like with the brownouts, there's just nothing that you can do.
So would you agree with me then that the SAFER grant is meant to provide coverage while you guys sharpen those pencils and make some decisions?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I've got the quote from the SAFER grant website. And what it says is the goal is to enhance the local fire department's abilities to comply with staffing response and operational standards established by OSHA and by the National Fire Protection Association. So that's exactly what they're doing, Scott. It's lending a hand. It's giving you a foot up until your community can figure out how to overcome the challenge that it's faced with.
Well, it sounds like you're working up some interesting community cooperation ideas.
And, you know, you asked me about what else can we do in the meantime, facing the shortage that we have.
Right.
And one of the strategies that we've taken is to pursue as many grant opportunities as we possibly can. Because if we can purchase our necessary items through grants, that frees money up then for other equipment and personnel to be able to maintain that minimum staffing. And so some of the things we've been successful with, we got what's called an assistance to firefighters grant for $452,000. This was just a year or two ago to purchase new SCBAs for all of our firefighters. SCBAs are the breathing apparatus that we use when we enter a structure fire. And those things have about a 10-year recommended lifespan. And ours had been stretched to about 12 years because we were trying to be fiscally responsible. But instead of having to come up with $500,000 out of the community's coffers, we were able to seek out this grant and have it awarded to us. So things like that are primarily how we're trying to stretch the dollars out in the community and make sure that we're as responsible as we can be in providing the service. Some of the other grants that we've been able to acquire, we got $8,500 from the Hunter Club for technical rescue equipment. We just, not 2 weeks ago, were awarded a $5,800 grant from Firehouse Subs for active shooter bags. And what those are is it allows our firefighters to go into active shooter situations and provide immediate life-saving treatment for anybody that's been shot while the police department handles the shooter situation. So we're going to be carrying those on all of our frontline engines. We recently got a $70,000 grant for a hazmat monitor. We got another grant for $23,000 for thermal imagers. So there's a lot of work that's going on right now and trying to seek out other grant opportunities to free the dollars up here at home so that we can continue to keep people on the engines.
Right, and each one of those grants makes it possible to devote that much more money to salaries.
Exactly, exactly.
Now, and I'm not sure if you know this or not, is SAFER pretty much the only grant that deals with paying for personnel? Are the rest of them generally for equipment?
It is. It's the only one that's out there for paying for personnel. The rest, like you said, is for equipment. For 1 year, the federal government put out a trial grant for fire stations to be built. That was back in 2009, and that grant went away. But we have personnel whose part of their work assignment is to monitor grants and see when these different opportunities pop up. If I could mention their names, Scott, would that be okay? I would be remiss in not giving credit to our support staff. They're pretty critical for these grants.
Of course, yeah, they must work pretty hard. They kind of have to do detective work.
They do. We've got Karen Canizzaro, Marsha Collier, Jamie Sventek, and Melissa Busby. They're all Prescott Fire Department and City of Prescott staff who, among many, many other duties, monitor and maintain our grants so that we can keep bringing money into the community. And, you know, Scott, I haven't even mentioned the wildland grants because that doesn't fall directly under my area of supervision. But we've brought in literally millions of dollars into this community through the wildland grant program that right now Chief Don Devendorf has oversight of. To help make sure that our community is safe, that we have fire-wise communities that we're able to support, that we have fuels mitigation programs that we're able to keep active. And so, again, all of that's money that we're freeing up from the city coffers to be put towards other purposes. And, you know, when you work in a municipality, and I feel like this is an important thing to keep in mind, we talk about fire department staffing. But really, we're looking at all the employees citywide. If we can save $25,000 from the fire department budget with the grant, our people, because of public safety, their positions might be safe. But that $25,000 now might help keep a library worker employed, or it might help keep one of our parks and rec staff employed. And at the fire department, we're very aware of the fact that the decisions that we make in public safety has a direct impact on the other departments within our municipality and how they're able to provide their services to the community as well.
Well, it sounds like you're making a good faith effort to make it possible to keep things rolling after the SAFER grant expires.
We're trying our best, and we really are thinking outside of the box. And I'll tell you what, Scott, we welcome people to come to our stations and look around. If any of the fire crews are in the station, because these days they're pretty busy, they will be more than happy to stop what they're doing and just show everybody what the equipment is that we have, why we have to carry it, why we operate the way that we operate. You know, a lot of people don't even recognize that we have paramedics on board our fire engines, and they're surprised to find that out, and they're even more surprised to find out why we do that. So we encourage people, if you're curious about how your money's being spent or, it, you know, the efforts that we're making to be fiscally responsible with that, we would love for them to come and take a look.
All right, we'll leave it there. Corey Moser, Okay. Thanks for joining me on Code 3 this week.
Thank you for having me, Scott. It was a pleasure.
Okay, so if you enjoyed this podcast, and I know a bunch of you do, help us out and leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. It'll help others find us. And if you have a topic you'd like us to address, just go to the website, code3podcast.com, and let us know. One more thing. To quote a fairly obscure metal song, if you like what you hear, then go tell somebody. This podcast can cover whatever subjects we want, and having the firefighter community behind us can only make the content better for everyone. So tell a friend. That's all for this week. I'm Scott Orr. I hope you'll join me again next week. Until then, see ya.
Code 3 is a production of Enchanted Sky Media. To get in contact with us, visit code3podcast.com. And if you haven't subscribed yet, you should. Don't miss an episode. Find us at the Apple iTunes Store, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.